Well, hello and welcome to our second episode of Onc Lives, Onc Checked series on regional therapies. Once again, I'm Dr. Gregory Tesey. I'm the Chief of Surgical Oncology for the Southern Region at Hackensack Meridian Health in New Jersey and assistant professor of at the School of Medicine. For today's episode, we're going to be shifting from peritoneal-directed therapies to liver-directed regional therapies. Our focus today is on hepatic artery infusion, or HAI, which is a powerful option for treating primary metastatic tumors to the liver. We are once again joined by my colleagues, Dr. Benjamin Golis, who is the Vice Chair of Surgery, JSUMC Cancer Surgery, Eric Pletcher, surgical oncologist and assistant professor also at the School of Medicine. They're going to be moderating our session today. And they'll be interviewing Dr. Anthony Scholler, who you might remember from our previous episode on PIPEC. Dr. Scholler is also a surgical oncologist, as the rest of us, and as well as the medical director of quality for the Department of Surgery. He leads our HAI program at HMH Jersey Shore University Medical Center. So Ben and Eric, why don't you kick us off with a little reminder about why regional therapies even matter?
Great. Thanks, Greg. Regional therapies, as we know, concentrate drug where the tumor burden is highest. They generally reduce systemic exposure, and they can amplify anti-tumor effect while preserving quality of life. HAI really exemplifies those advantages for liver-dominant disease.
Yeah, Ben, I totally agree. And it's my hope that our listeners are basically a mix of people who never heard of a hepatic artery infusion pump and those who may know a small amount. But today, we're basically going to break it down into the physiologic rationale with the procedure, the workflow behind it. We'll talk a little bit about patient selection, including our exclusion and inclusion criteria. Then we'll transition over to safety, efficacy. We'll talk about some of the hurdles that Dr. Tesey and Scholler experienced when starting up their program. And then finally, we go over some guidelines as well as the emerging trials focusing in on hepatic artery infusion pumps.
Great. Dr. Scholler, quick opening thought. Why pick HAI for an episode on regional therapies?
Yes, great question. So I think HAI is probably one of the oldest, if not most studied, regional therapy leveraging high systemic chemotherapy to the liver with minimal extrahepatic perfusion, therefore eliminate toxicity. The data goes all the way back to 1980, stating clear benefits for colorectal liver mets as well as intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma.
Well, maybe we can quickly discuss some data about the scope of the problem, right? Like what are the main indications for HAI? And, generally we would refer to these, we would look at patients who have metastatic colorectal cancer to the liver and unresectable intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma. Colon cancer is the third most common cancer in the U.S., and about 60% of patients at some point develop metastatic disease, whether synchronous or metachronous. And we know that resection improves survival with, depending on the study, average survival around 40 months, although in certain series as long as 60 months or 5 years. About 10 to 20% of patients are resectable at diagnosis, and chemo can convert a good number of these patients to resectability, but still many of them never become eligible, and liver-only recurrences are quite common. Shifting to cholangiocarcinoma, only 15% about are resectable at diagnosis, and despite that, in addition to that, only maybe 60% of them are able to achieve an R0 resection. Liver recurrence is also very common in intrahepatic cholangio, and downstaging with chemo far less common. The rates of response tend to be a lot worse.
So I think we'll transition to some of the physiologic rationale behind using the hepatic artery infusion pump. Anthony, if you could start us off with talking about a little bit what the pump actually is and why the liver anatomy makes it effective.
Yeah, the liver has a dual perfusion with the hepatic artery and the portal vein. So the portal vein supplies 80% of the blood flow, mostly to the liver parenchyma. But interestingly, the hepatic artery, when you have metastatic disease from, say, colorectal liver mets, or you have a primary liver tumor like intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, they use the blood supply from the hepatic artery developing collaterals. So when we give the chemotherapy, via the gastroduodenal artery, it specifically goes to that tumor and does spare some of the blood supply to the liver as well. Also allows us to take advantage of decreasing the extrahepatic perfusion because we're supplying it directly to the liver, as well as some of the pharmacokinetics of the chemotherapy agents that we use.
Greg, from a cancer perspective, what advantage does this translate into?
Well, there are several advantages that we know of. There are higher intrahepatic objective responses, notably because of the directed nature of the therapy and the high dosing we use. There's better control of the liver dominant burden, and the conversion from unresectable to resectable disease is improved over systemic chemotherapy, which is a major determinant of long-term outcome in colorectal liver metastasis and intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma.
Anthony, could you take us through a step-by-step process of the procedure involved with placing one of these pumps, and then kind of walk us through what both the patients and other providers should expect?
Sure. So I think you start off with good preoperative imaging, usually with a CT angiography to delineate the arterial anatomy. You want to look for normal versus any aberrant or accessory anatomy. So that's going to be important when you're placing the pump. You're also going to be looking at the liver, its health, any signs of cirrhosis or portal hypertension. And also looking at the size of the GDA, making sure that it's adequate to place it. Once you have your good preoperative imaging, you have the right patient selection, and then start with the procedure. So most patients are probably familiar with a chemo port that goes underneath the skin. I always tell my patients that the hepatic pump is like a port. It's probably about four times the size of that. It's implanted in a subcutaneous pocket, usually on the left side. And then you have your normal surgery where you usually have exploratory laparotomy. You're looking for any signs of metastatic or peritoneal disease, which would be a contraindication through the surgery. You then identify the anatomy, specifically the gastroduodenal artery. You make an incision in that. You then tunnel a catheter from the pump subcutaneously into the abdomen. You then tie the catheter into the GDA. In addition, you're going to do a cholecystectomy because if you leave the gallbladder in, you're going to have acute cholecystitis afterwards. During that time, we then do a study where we look at any extra perfusion from the liver. We check methylene blue, or some people use ICG dye, and you can actually see the liver light up. And as long as there's no extra perfusion, then the pump is ready to go. It gets filled with heparin afterwards so that it doesn't clot while the patient's recovering. Patients usually stay in the hospital 3 to 5 days, usually due to pain, but the recovery is pretty straightforward. Prior to leaving the hospital, a patient gets a special nuclear medicine study with technetium albumin that gets injected. It's a second study that basically confirms what we found in the operating room, that there's no extrahepatic perfusion. If there is extrahepatic perfusion, say to a say the right gastric artery or a smaller vessel, we can usually get interventional radiology to embolize that and repeat the study to make sure there's no extrahepatic perfusion. Afterwards, once the patient recovers, we usually start treatment, depending on how the patient's doing, with either heparin followed by FUDR or fluoxuridine. Those happen to go every 2 weeks, and we usually do about 6 cycles of that concurrent with systemic therapy.
That's right. I think it's a very nice explanation and description of the procedure. Anthony, who do you pick for this? What are the usual inclusion and exclusion criteria for somebody for HAI therapy?
So we mentioned, you know, colorectal liver mets that are usually unresectable. Some people do it in the adjuvant setting. In addition to the unresectable intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, but first, your patient's got to be fit for surgery. And they also have to have good liver function. So you want to make sure that the patient doesn't have a history of cirrhosis. On your CT scans, you're going to be looking for any collaterals or varices, hypertrophy of the caudate lobe. Once you rule out portal hypertension and cirrhosis, because that would be a contraindication, you would then look for LFTs. Usually we don't want a T-bili elevated greater than 1.3 because it's very hard to dose the systemic therapy afterwards. And you obviously don't want people who have metastatic disease beyond the liver. So if you have peritoneal disease, it'd be a strong indication. A relative indication would be maybe those small, less than 1 centimeter pulmonary nodules. But after maybe a couple of cycles of systemic therapy with a follow-up CT scan and no progression, those patients would probably be an indication for putting in the pump.
I do think it's probably worth noting that these treatment cycles, so when the patients come in to get their pump filled, they're quick. It only takes an order of minutes. I mean, obviously you need well-trained staff, but it's different than when you get your infusions systemically and, you know, patients might have to stay in the infusion suite for a long time. So that's very convenient. However, it does require a lot of diligent follow-up with the patient. These pumps are autonomous, and so they essentially just empty their reservoir over a period of a few weeks. And so if patients can't or won't go to their follow-ups, then the pump can, quote, run dry, which effectively makes it not usable. You can't really fix that or replace that. So if patients have logistical problems or need social support, that has to be addressed before, or else they'll never really get their therapy because the pump will become non-functional and generally they can't be replaced.
Greg, to echo what you and Anthony have kind of laid out, it sounds like it's been logistically complex from the preoperative, intraoperative, and then postoperative care. Anthony, could you walk us through some of the main hurdles you had experienced while creating this program with Greg and what you did to address them with the rest of your team?
Yeah, so I think there's, you know, a multitude of anticipated and unanticipated, you know, hurdles. It's a multidisciplinary approach, you know, so we're working hand in hand with our medical oncologists dosing the systemic therapy, as well as I dose the FUDR. We're also working with our interventional radiologists who are helping us, you know, with any signs of extra hepatic perfusion afterwards. So getting everybody on board and buy-in, I think, is a very important first step. Afterwards, you know, there's the training that's involved. So we have to have nursing staff in our infusion center that are trained to, you know, empty the pump and access it. Which in itself, you know, is a learning curve, as well as talking to our nuclear medicine colleagues about our, you know, post-operative nuclear medicine study as well. So coordinating all those factors is a very complex issue, but making sure that everybody believes in what we're doing is, you know, best for the patient, and getting their buy-in so that we can effectively schedule all these things in an effective manner is very important. In addition, there's things that you have to learn, you know, from the business side of medicine as well when it comes to billing and coding and reimbursement and how that works. So you have to work with your billers as well. And also, I think you also have to work with your rep who makes the hepatic pump, which is Intera, and having them to have the local support when you start your program. Because they have good educational liaisons. They have people in the OR to help you as well, because the pump needs to be filled and programmed, and everybody in the OR needs to learn how to access the pump and fill with heparin prior, and how it needs to be heated up as well. So there's a lot of steps that need to happen, and it needs to be discussed up hand so that everybody understands what we're trying to achieve before you put one of these in, because there's a lot of things that could go wrong during this process.
I really commend you guys on getting the buy-in from all of the multi-D teams you needed to get the program going. I would like to transition over to safety, especially focusing on some of the complications that are related to this process, especially for our surgical oncologists out there who are trying to start a program themselves.
So I think the complications, the way I look at it, is there's two categories. There's pump complications and there's complications from the pump chemotherapy or the FUDR. So the surgical complications that we see from the pump are you can have a malfunction of the pump. So you can have a thrombosis. You can have catheter lodgement, which is less likely. Those are usually salvageable, you know, 90% of the time with some heparin just instilled through the pump, and we're doing an angiogram through the pump to look and see if there's a thrombosis. There's also, you can have a dissection as well. More commonly though, is usually the, what I like to call pump pocket infections. You know, you're putting a pump in patients in a subcutaneous pocket. It's getting accessed many times. So similar to a chemotherapy port, you know, you can get cellulitis and abscesses, and it's very hard to salvage the pump once that pocket becomes infected. Once you get past these, then there's the complications of the floxuridine or FUDR. The two major complications are biliary sclerosis, what happens in about less than 8% of patients, and less commonly is gastric ulcers, which is usually around, you know, 5%. The gastric ulcers should be less because if you have your intraoperative mapping study and then your postoperative nuclear medicine study, you know, that should be very low. Some patients have been reported in the literature to have pancreatitis, but I haven't seen that, especially if they have good mapping studies. And the last thing with the FUDR dosing is, you know, every 2 weeks we get a liver enzyme function test because the FUDR does increase the liver enzymes, and we are dosing the FUDR based on a nomogram that was created at Memorial Sloan Kettering based on the elevation of the liver enzyme. So that's another toxicity as well.
I think as you outlined, the side effect profile and potential for complication really highlights how necessary it is to go to a center where they're very experienced in doing this, like you and Dr. Chisi have set up.
So maybe we'll, you know, just talk about some of the evidence that supports the use of HAI. Probably what's cited most commonly is the series out of Memorial Sloan Kettering, who really have been the greatest proponents of this treatment. They've been doing it for decades. There was a landmark single center analysis from them, which took place over 20 years, and basically compared patients who had HAI plus systemic chemo versus systemic chemo alone in completely resected metastatic disease. And they had longer median overall survival, something like 65 plus months versus 44 months. And also higher 5 and 10 year survival rates. Now, this study was criticized to some extent because they use less modern chemotherapeutic agents. Once again, in their defense, this was over a couple decades. So although more updated analyses with more modern chemotherapeutics that were published sometime later showed conversion rates still higher, 5 year survival rates still improved with HAI, something like almost 80% compared to 61% in the standard arm. There are multiple trials ongoing, and recent meta-analysis and pooled institutional reports confirmed higher hepatic response rates and improved hepatic progression-free survival with HAI plus systemic therapy versus systemic therapy alone. And if we actually move to cholangiocarcinoma, the data are also pretty compelling for liver-only disease. Prospective phase 2 trial using FUDR combined with systemic gemcitabine and I think oxaliplatin reported a median overall survival of about 25 months and a 1 year survival rate of close to 90% in unresectable liver-confined disease, which was substantially better compared to historical controls with GEM-CIS, which is the standard of care. A systematic review and meta-analysis pulling multiple series reported a pooled 3 year overall survival of around 39.5% with HAI-based approaches versus the very low 3 year overall survival for historic GEM-CIS controls. There's been more recent studies. There was a multi-center cohort comparison that found patients with multifocal intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma that were treated with the pump and FUDR had overall survival that was similar to those that actually had their tumors resected, whilst this group also had more extensive bilobar disease and lower perioperative mortality, which supports HAI as a meaningful alternative for select multifocal intrahepatic cholangio patients. And interestingly, there have been some very recent trials looking at the dosing of FUDR. You know, Dr. Schuller was talking about, we give very high doses, sometimes 1 to 400 times the intravenous dose, which can lead to issues with hepatic toxicity, biliary sclerosis. So some investigators have found that if you actually lower this dose, you're able to give, you'll decrease early hepatic toxicity, and you're actually able to give larger cumulative doses because ultimately the patients can get more cycles of treatment before their liver is adversely affected, and therefore their outcomes are improved.
So taking all of this historic foundational data into account, where do we stand right now with respect to some of our national guidelines like the NCCN?
I think major societies like the NCCN focus on the multidisciplinary approach, appropriate selection, and being at a center with expertise is where we're at right now.
Great. I think that was a nice review of the current data for metastatic colon and intrahepatic cholangio and review of the existing literature. So Anthony, what's on the horizon for HI therapy? What can we look forward to in the future?
So I think historically we've always used fluoxuridine as the pump chemo for HAI. I think moving forward, people are going to be looking at different drugs, probably immunotherapy. I think there are also going to be trials that are going to look at pump chemotherapy plus immunotherapy, especially in the setting of intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, because we know that there's good data for immunotherapy with cholangiocarcinoma, but the studies that were done with only chemo as well. There's going to be a multitude of new trials that are going to come out looking at tailoring biomarkers to HAI as well. There's an ongoing clinical study that's going on right now for unresectable colorectal liver mets, EA-222, that we should have exciting data because that will compare HAI to modern systemic therapy in a national multi-institution. So we'll have great data to further support the pump as well.
So the future for hepatic artery infusion pumps definitely sounds promising. If I may, I'd like to summarize. So hepatic artery infusion pumps are a mature regional cancer therapy with not only a strong physiologic rationale, but also an established role in liver-dominant colorectal mets, as well as an emerging role for unresectable intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma at experienced centers. And there's a lot of evolving evidence that shows not only improved hepatic control, conversion to resectability, and many instances improved survival in properly selected patients.
Yeah, and if I may add to that, I think the bottom line that, you know, I think what we can take away from this is that if in people that are interested in starting a HAI program, you know, based on what your guys' experience and what we've gone over here, is that it sounds like there's a, you know, you really need to invest early in the multidisciplinary approach and bring in all your stakeholders early in the process. You're going to need to get comfortable with the vascular, you know, aspects of the pump, as well as the use of the pump and the placement of the pump. Develop your pharmacy relationships for accurate dosing. You're going to have to identify, you know, the appropriate patients, including referrals, and make sure that everyone's educated on the pump and how it's used. And then, you know, bring in all of your ancillary support staff to support this important program.
Great. Well, this has been, you know, pretty terrific. And once again, huge thanks to Dr. Anthony Scholler for leading this clinical deep dive, and Drs. Golis and Pletcher for moderating today's conversation. Join us for our next episode when we return to another regional therapy, transarterial microperfusion, or TAMP, for the treatment of pancreatic cancer. Until then, thank you for listening.